Welcome to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast, hosted by former Army ROTC Professor of Military Science, Lieutenant Colonel Retired Rob Kirkland. In these episodes, we explore how to best prepare yourself to obtain one of these valuable scholarships for those applicants who wish to attend a college or university and become officers in the military. The application process can be complex and confusing. This podcast works to make it more understandable. And now, the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. All right, welcome back to the ROTC Scholarship Consulting Podcast. This is Lieutenant Colonel Retired Rob Kirkland, and I'm pleased to have with me today a retired Navy Captain, Matt Roberts. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Rob. It's good to be here with you.
I've been wanting to get you on the podcast for a long time here. We really want to talk today about all things Navy ROTC, and you've just come off a tour and are now retired, but you've come off a tour as the Professor of Naval Science at Auburn University. Can you just talk to the listening audience about your military background and what you're doing these days?
I was commissioned out of the Naval ROTC program at the University of Arizona way back in the previous century, 1993. I was a career surface warfare officer, and more particularly a destroyerman. Served on frigate, destroyers, and a cruiser. And then my final sea command was Surfron 14 out of Mayport, where I got to the honor of owning 9 warships. I always wanted to end up where I had began. I really wanted to go to the University of Arizona, but the Marine Corps has got a death grip on it right now. My wife is a diehard Auburn fan, and I married into it. And we were lucky when this opened up, and I got a little bit more than 3 years in command of the Auburn unit.
Awesome. And know that my experience as a professor of military science was awesome. How was your tour at Auburn, and did your family enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. We took advantage of everything that the university and the area had to offer, right? From going to day trips here and around into Georgia up to Smoky Mountains, to doing what freshmen and sophomore, juniors and seniors would do as students here as well. I got the opportunity to get another master's degree while I was here. We're looking forward to the next phase of retired life. I don't even know, what, 50-something? Yeah. I'm retired already. No. And searched for a new job, and I got one. And it's this remote world that I'm just feeling my way through. And really excited about where that is going. But knew also that I wanted to still give back to where I came from, and that's the ROTC world.
Very cool. And then we're thrilled that you'll be coming on as part of the ROTC consulting we have here to help Navy and Marine Corps option ROTC candidates succeed in getting a scholarship and serving their country in the Navy or the Marine Corps. And can you give the listeners an idea, how cool is it to be the professor of naval science at a college or university?
I tell you what, it's really cool. I came from the waterfront. I was used to being in fifth gear and the gas pedal on all the time. And then coming to, I would call it sleepy Auburn, Alabama. It's not Los Angeles where USC is, right? Where everything is all go all the time. But here at Auburn, you can walk it and amongst friends the entire time. It's a very small campus. It's only some 20 some odd thousand students, both undergrad and grad. And it's a very small community of instructors and professors, a community of students. Because of its size, are still able to look out for each other and provide that social togetherness that I think, while I was here for the first year of COVID, it came back very quickly after we came back in session. And I was able to have classroom time if I wanted classroom time. And the difference between big schools and small schools, I think it has to do with how you want to fit in as well. People come to Auburn because they want that. It's an engineering school first, and then it's got other stuff. They come here because they want that vibe of the loveliest village on the plains. But people will go to USC because they want a different vibe. People go to, maybe they have a long history of going to Ivy League schools, so they go to Penn or Yale or Harvard. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the piece of paper on the wall is just the piece of paper on the wall. It's the commission that counts. I really enjoyed having the midshipmen and the officer candidates and the MSEPs and watching them grow from freshmen to sophomores, or watching them grow from sophomores to seniors and getting commissioned. and the different leadership positions that they would put in, and some of the struggles that they would have standing in front of people for the first time and watching that light bulb come on.
Right.
It was very cool. I enjoyed it. It was a great place to, end it.
That's really good. And then you're supervising a whole cadre of both Navy and Marine Corps, both enlisted and officer, as well as civilian employees and government service employees too. So significant responsibility that you have as the person who's in charge of that program.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, oftentimes I get this question from candidates. They say, which ROTC program do you prefer, Auburn or Alabama or Georgia Tech? And the answer I give to them is, the Navy ROTC training that you receive in any of those schools is the same. It's going to be a Navy captain or a Marine Corps colonel. You're going to have cadre there. Go to the school that's the best fit for you and realize that the Navy ROTC program is going to be the same no matter where you go as far as the training goes. Do you think that's good advice?
I think it is. You should apply for schools that fit you and your persona, not go to schools where you think that there's some edge to it, because the curriculum for the ROTC program is standard across the board. Mm-hmm. How it's delivered will vary from instructor to instructor, right? We're told as the O6s that it's to be the same, but you can have different flavor at each place. I've run across kids that think, oh, well, if I go to Auburn, there's a lot of aviators that come out of Auburn. It's going to be a lot easier to become an aviator. Can be anything further from the truth. What I've found is that sometimes a friend of mine was the PNS at Tulane, and he's like, all my students want to go be SWOs and drive ships. And I was like, all my students want to go fly airplanes, and I'm a SWO. It's almost like rebelling against the PNS. I don't know. But you go where you think that fits you instead of what you think. It's searching for the answer from somebody that you're at the interview. And you think, I'm going to say this answer because I think it's what he wants to hear. Right. No, you should say what's from your heart in the interview, because that comes off as real, not fishing. Because after 30 years, you can tell when someone's fishing for the answer. It's the same thing with school. You go to where you think you fit into the program, and that's where you go, and that's where you bloom, and that's where you're successful.
Right. And the idea that you're in maybe ROTC for 6 to 8 hours a week, the rest of the time you're doing your regular things in your college, university. You take a visit, say, to Auburn when you're a senior in high school and you meet Lieutenant X. Lieutenant X may not be there the next year when you show up. You think that Auburn's a great school because Lieutenant X was a great person that you met. But the reality is that the cadre change over all the time. Sometimes facilities are better at some places than others. Was the support good for you there with Navy ROTC and Auburn?
It definitely was. Yeah, we shared a building with the other two programs, Air Force and Army. Air Force, to tell you, the Space Force was there also. Of course, I've got the Marine Corps and then the Army guys. Amongst us, we share things also. Auburn built a rappelling tower for Army ROTC. And then Auburn built a Marine Corps certified obstacle course. We shared those things amongst the different programs as well. And we had very good relationship with the university. I had brothers and sisters that did not have that at different universities. They were in a basement, or they had one office in one building and another office in another, and then didn't have their own classrooms. Each one of the programs at Auburn has their own classrooms for instruction, their own supply centers for issue. And it's just a very wonderful place and a lot easier than some of my brothers and sisters had to deal with.
That may be something for potential candidates who are looking at ROTC programs may want to look at a little bit, is what's the support that the university gives to the program. That may make a little bit of difference, but again, the training's the same.
It's exactly the same.
Even if they don't have their own dedicated classrooms, or maybe they don't have some of the facilities that you had in Auburn. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool about the obstacle course. And that's just an indicator of the support that Auburn gave to you guys.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of PT early in the morning down at the intramural fields. And all we would have to do is have the arrangement for the lights to be turned on early, and there would be no cost to us to use them. Or the sports complex, using that in the afternoon for some lab periods. Same thing, just arranging it with the university. And then we would be out before the first, intramural football team hit the field. So nice. It's just about that is on the staff to do that arrangement. to build that relationship. And then we would feed it to the students to then, that would be on them to make those reservations. And if we needed to step in to deal with any difficulties, then we would. But the majority of it, by the time I left, was all student run. And that's one of the big proud points that I have for the program, was that it was all student run.
Oh, that's great stuff. Well, having been an Army ROTC person and having observed both the Air Force and Navy, one of the things that jumps out to me that I really always wanted to talk to you about was the summers. Because in Army and Air Force, there's that one summer that's for 30 days, either at Maxwell for Air Force or for Army. It's at now at Fort Knox in Kentucky, where all the training gets done there. Then the rest of the summer, it's like they're off and pretty much not doing much of anything unless they want to volunteer to do extra stuff. Right. And then after they graduate and commission, then they go off for 6 months. If you're a field artilleryman, you go to Fort Sill, wherever you go for your training. The Navy and the Marine Corps is so much different in the way that they approach things with their Navy ROTC training and their summers. Can you talk about why that's the case? Why the Navy and Marine Corps does it that way versus Army?
Sure. I'll start with the summer after freshman year where the kids go off to accoutrement. They get a taste of the different warfare areas, so submarine, aviation, and surface warfare. If there's any wonderment about what the other sides of this, oh, I want to be in air aviation, I want to fly F-18s. Of course you do. So, but then they go and they find out there's this whole submarine thing. And then they go, what? That's really cool too. And they're going to pay me a lot of money. And I think, yes, they should pay you more money because you don't get to see the sun. But that is each service, each segment inside the service's selling point. That's their time to advertise, right? For surface warfare. Hopefully they got to get underway, go shoot all the guns and drive fast and maybe do a replenishment at sea and stuff like that. Marine Week for me, I don't think we do it anymore, but Marine Week for me was probably the funnest week and galvanized that I did not want to be a Marine. Plus, I liked air conditioning too much. The aviation week was cool. Right. I got to fly and then an EA-6B, it's not around anymore, in the front seat with the pilot. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. But it was surface warfare. And I got to go out and shoot and lead and see others that were doing the same thing that I would be doing. And then the next summer, it's shadowing enlisted members. They can see what it's to be an enlisted. And then the senior year, which is required for everybody, is to go out and shadow a junior officer, whether it's on a submarine, whether it's on a surface ship, or you can get an aviation cruise and hopefully go flying, but you will see what it's to wear, be in a flight suit, and be on the flight line, and hopefully go fly. That's your last ditch effort to see what the communities are before you make your selection and it gets assigned to you. So service assignment happens after that, whether you're going to be in aviation, submarines, or surface ships. But that's the summers. Now, the Marine Corps guys will go off to training event their junior year to get them ready for OCS, for Officer Candidate School. They'll go to Officer Candidate School, come back, graduate commission, and then go off to TBS, which is the basic school. And after basic school is when they get their MOS, whether they're going to be infantry, maybe they've got an aviation contract already. But it all starts at that training period of OCS and backing it up to freshman year where they start building on road runs, night navigation, land navigation. We've got the plastic M4s, but we also have sledgehammers, which weigh the same as a rifle. So they'll go out into the woods and carry a lot. Very cool stuff. And probably my proudest point when I was a professor of naval science was that the last year that the kids went off, the midshipmen went off to Officer Candidate School, the three that we had sent ranked in the top 10 along lines with guys from the Citadel, from Norwich, from places that have more of that Marine Corps flavor to it. I was very happy for those kids at OCS that year. And then they come back, they go to their senior year, and then they're commissioned, and they go off to the basic school.
Yeah. It is interesting that also you have a summer before they start the freshman year, which is the Navy indoctrination that is at Great Lakes. I always was really impressed with the Navy freshmen that would come in that would be all squared away and good to go for their freshman year. The Navy does a really good job there of upfront training before they even come to your program the first fall.
Yeah, and that program really isn't that old. It's been tried to been canceled a few times. But what we've found is that it's a great separation point for, you can find the midshipman candidates, as they're called at that point, that they don't really want to be there, right? Maybe they did the scholarship because pressure from their parents or something like that. And they finally get into the meat of the matter and it's just not for them. Right. They'll get one phone call home to try to realign their priorities. And then the second call, if they make it, it's pick me up at the airport at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning because I'm on a flight out of here. And we never lost anybody from Auburn, but I know other schools that had. So
right. That has a lot to be said for it. Also to just prepare them for the start of ROTC training in the fall. And you're not getting somebody who's just green off of the street. So I applaud the Navy and Marine Corps for putting the resources into the training that I just don't think the Air Force and the Army perhaps do as effectively.
I think the Navy and Marine Corps can do it because our program is much smaller, right? So we're only in 70 schools and there's a lot more that the Army is involved in.
Yeah, there's 273 host programs for Army ROTC. The dynamics are certainly for each program, and we seem to all produce fairly good officers going out of ROTC. Maybe we're all doing something right.
I think so. And somehow on the Army and the Air Force side, I don't know if it's a self-selection from active duty to reserve and guard, but I think that also finds its way into goodness as well. The people that want to be part of the guard, they ended up being part of the guard and reserve forces. Now, all Marines and naval officers out of the Navy ROTC program are commissioned to active duty, since we have no direct line into the reserves. And of course, there's no Navy Guard.
I know there are a few on occasion that have a very low GPA or don't do very well, and they get forced into the Guard and Reserve. But you're right. Most of the cadets decide that they want to go into the Guard and Reserve for various reasons. But it does give them that sort of that option that both Air Force and Navy and Marine Corps don't have. But let's shift gears to the scholarship here. That's what a lot of our listeners are interested in. We'll take Marine Corps separately. When I talk to people about Navy ROTC, but the first thing you got to say is, are you interested in engineering, a tier one or tier two major? That's the big thing up front. When I see a candidate who's got a 550 SAT or a low math SAT, and they're interested in Navy ROTC, I pause for a second. But your tier one or tier two is most of the scholarship applicants. So I know that you at Auburn had some experiences with candidates trying to navigate the engineering or hard science curriculum.
Right. I'll start off with, on the Navy side, our average ACT score was about 33.
Right.
Super smart kid. There's no way that I would get a scholarship. But they all know when they come that it's a tier one, tier two type environment. And that first year, they come in bright-eyed, and we lost a couple chemical engineering guys. They come in, they're like, I'm going to be a chemical engineer. Okay. It's one of the hardest curriculums at Auburn. The high ACT score gels amongst them, and it does away with, I think, some of the academic competitiveness of the midshipmen, and they come together and, for the most part, study together. They form their own study groups. Now, we had some that fall a little short and each semester, and they end up being on study hall. And then they come off of study hall, realize that it's much better when they listen to advisors and they listen to counselors. And it's a lot easier than to keep their scholarship, right, than it is to go on the leave of absence academically. And then they need to tell mom and dad that they have to pay for a semester of college because their academics was not good. But for the most part, the 90% to 95% of the midshipmen get it from the first day. They understand that it's a job. When I checked in the groups, I would tell them that it's their job. And I'm their boss. And I don't understand you pose with the head off to the side. I was like, the United States is paying your scholarship. I am your boss. And then they would get it. And I always invited the parents to sit in the back row and take it the end brief. And it was funny that the parents that had never served actually got it more than the parents that had served. But they understood that. Why are you, the ones that had served would come up to me afterwards and be like, why are you coming in so high and right on that pitch, their boss? Because like, it needs to be. right? Because they're all adults. They're all there making a conscious decision, and their parents are going to leave, and they're going to leave them with me. And I am not their parental fill-in figure, right? I'm their commanding officer. I'm their boss. And they needed to understand that from day one. And I just found it interesting that the parents that had not served understood that a little bit better than the ones that had. But the students, though, that gelling experience of having gone through either one of the cycles up at Great Lakes also was developmentally positive for them because they had a shared experience when the program started in August. And dependent on what their major was, they all had to go through calculus. They all had to go through calculus-based physics. They even had more shared pain, right? Going through the program. A little bit less on the Marine Corps side, but what academically painful they didn't have to go through, the physical activity for them was much higher. The bar was set much higher because when they go off to OCS and then TBS, their career is set forward on their placement there, not in the academics of a classroom, right? It's competitive to get submarines academically. It's not competitive academically, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but to be an infantry officer. Sure, there are leadership quotients that must be made, but there's a lot more physical quotients that must be made on the Marine Corps side. One can say that it's easier than the other, but I would say that they're equally as hard to get through and made easier to get through the camaraderie of the program.
Yeah, that's going to be something the parents listening to this and candidates are going to feel really good about is the teamwork that the midshipmen have together and trying to get through the hard science and engineering curriculum that so many there on scholarship are doing with tier one and tier two.
And each school gets money every year to hire a physics and a calculus tutor.
Oh, great.
So when the midshipmen are struggling and we pull them in for counseling, or they fail or get a D in physics or calculus, we ask them. We've got the tutor records right there. How many times did you visit the tutor? But sometimes it's an integrity check. And other times the kid will say, I never went because I was too prideful to go. But that's part of leadership also, knowing your weakness and striving for success, seeking help, right? I would say that after that first tumble, sometimes with grades in that second semester of freshman, first semester of sophomore year, it gets a lot better after that. They actually understand that they can ask for help and it will be given to them. More than one occasion, I would call the head of one of the colleges, the deans of one of the colleges, and say, hey, I'm having a problem with one of your professors. I don't know if he's singling out the Navy guy or what. And I would say the professor's name, and then the dean would say, okay, no, not a problem. I will take care of this. The support is there for the student as long as the student's doing their job.
That's what I think people who are listening to this need to understand is if you are on the Navy ROTC scholarship, you're looking at those hard majors that are difficult and they just need to go into with your eyes wide open that it's going to be a challenge. And I know the Marine Corps, of course, is a challenge too in different ways, but academically, you got to look at what your fit is, right? I mean, academics wise too. So that's an important part of that. So
I would even tell guys when they came on for their interviews and their parents are waiting out in the waiting area, I would ask them if they were taking AP calculus or AP physics. And they said, yes, and I've taken the exam and I got a 5. I get to waive 2 courses of it here. And I would tell them, take the calculus, because calculus at Auburn is not high school calculus. Right? So the next thing after that, so it's Calc 3, then it's differential equations if you're in the higher engineering classes. And if you don't have that background, that foundational element set forth by the calculus at Auburn or at Georgia Tech or whatever engineering school, and you're in engineering, you're really shortchanging yourself. Why not just take it again and get an A instead of bypassing it?
Yeah, and then it's taught a certain way and you learn it the way that the Auburn way, as you say, as we might say.
That's right.
So when these candidates, I talk to them and I say, are you interested in a tier one or tier two major with Navy ROTC? Then we get into preparing them for all the things that they need to do to get selected for this scholarship. You have experienced in the selection of these candidates for scholarship. And I was just interested in knowing some of your observations with candidates that were successful in getting a scholarship or were selected. But what were the characteristics of those individuals in particular? And we might break it down maybe in the scholar athlete leader.
That's basically it, right? Scholar athlete leader. We're not looking for somebody that just is excellent at exams or excellent in the classroom. I sat many boards. I was honored to be president of a few boards and get to see all the demographics after that. And what's important and the biggest takeaway, I think, is that Naval ROTC puts a lot of auspices in the selection criteria looking for the well-rounded individual, right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily someone that is completely book smart and takes standardized testing very well, but it also has been involved in their school and being involved in their community. It doesn't have to be that they're the school president or the class president every time, but maybe they are the treasurer, or maybe they're just involved as a representative from their homeroom, or they don't volunteer every day, but once a month they go down to the soup kitchen or the veterans home. You could be in the Boy Scouts, but you don't necessarily need to be an Eagle Scout. You could go to Boys State, not necessarily go to Boys Nation. It's you're active, but you're not burning yourself out. Right? We're looking for that well-rounded person that talks about everything around them, but not about themselves.
The Navy values, right? Where you're looking at your selfless service and putting others ahead of yourself. Navy Junior ROTC, I heard from another source that if you're in high school and you have a Navy Junior ROTC program in your high school and you're not participating in it, that may be an issue because you're not doing that in your school.
There's not enough time for us to actually go and look and see if there's a program at each high school. But I was in Navy JRTC in high school. It is the avenue that got my scholarship. So points are assigned by it. How active you were in it for 3 or 4 years. There are guys that sit the board that don't understand how important or how much of a time sump that JRTC can be, regardless of the program, right? Whether it's an Army JRTC program or a Navy one. Maybe they played football and then they hit 100% on the quarterback of the football team. But the JRTC kid, they're like, I don't know, 80%. That's why there's 7 people that sit aboard, right? It's not just one person determining it. And the president of the board can actually slow down the board and come and revisit somebody that seems they're getting a bad rap also by what they're involved in. So we can rewind the board and relook at a person as well. So
you're looking for a balanced scholar athlete leader that was a well-rounded individual, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be super excellent in everything, but just a solid person who's performing well in school.
Yeah. I think. Nope. Right. And then they pop up their senior year and they're playing tennis, right? Because they're trying something new, right? That's the people that we want that aren't afraid of trying something new, but also stick with something that they enjoy, even though they're not on the varsity team, right? Those are the people that we're looking for.
Now, as far as the interview, the write-up is read by the people on the board. And I know that you personally have done some interviews and as well as your staff at Auburn. What's your observations overall with the interview? Is it important?
You can tell on the board the write-ups between lieutenants doing them, junior officers doing them, and then the XOs and the COs doing them, right? I think the granularity of questioning and then the trying to get the answer is different when the ages are closer. I think that they may be a little bit more fishing for the correct answer from the lieutenant instead of from the older officers, right? It seems that if they know that they're coming to the CO for their interview, they will practice it with other people. Maybe one of their high school, the guidance counselor, or they'll practice it with their parents, or they'll practice it with teachers or maybe their boss. And you can tell people that have practiced their interview. Not that they've got the questions straight out of their pocket, because I would ask questions that aren't germane to the process at all, just to see where they would go. And I think my brother and sister 06 has probably do the same thing. It's that thing moving away from a canned process and trying to scratch past that first layer of preparedness to see how deep it goes, right? And saying to them, this is after they are asked a question, and maybe they don't have an answer. And I say, what? Not having an answer is fair. You're 18. Well, I don't expect you to have a whole lot of depth right now. Right? We're going to build that depth over the next 4 years.
So, but certainly candidates who are listening to this, who maybe are juniors this year, getting ready for their senior year next year, they could prepare for this interview, right? By maybe learning some things about the Navy, becoming more informed.
It's amazing how many kids don't know the core values of the Navy when they're asked, or what's the mission, or what do you want to do? I want to fly for the Navy. What do you want to fly? I want to fly an F-15. There's no F-15 in the Navy order of battle. Know about the service that you want to get into. And it's also going to be reflected in that. So I had interviewed a kid that the reason why I say, what do you want to fly an F-15? Because that's what he gave me. And so I wrote on the form, level of knowledge of the naval service isn't that high. And that goes into the board. At the level of sometimes the right, wrong, or indifferent, the level of response from a sitting CO is received much higher than that of a junior officer doing it.
They may get the lieutenant, they may get you, they may get the XO or something like that. It's just luck of the draw in some ways.
Yeah. And sometimes it was the university secretary who fields the phone calls. Let's open up the calendars and roll the wheel of destiny, right? And see where it ends up. Because during the academic year, during the week, we're very busy, especially if you wait until December to get your interview done.
Right.
Best of luck. If you really want a good interview practice, say you want to come to Auburn, you live in California, get on an airplane if you can afford it and fly to Auburn or to Atlanta and then get to Auburn and do your interview with the professor of naval science where you want to go to school.
That's definitely a great piece of advice because it shows the person's motivation and desire to serve. But he may not get the interview with you though, right? If he's flying from California.
If somebody was flying from California and they told the secretary that they were flying from California to have an interview, I would probably carve out time for that young man or that young woman who's putting that in. You put in the work, then you get the boss, right? Not that they wouldn't, but it's just sometimes times don't match up. And I would love to talk to all of them, but there's just so many.
Yeah, that's true. But I think you mentioned earlier, I think the important thing is that the boards understand that, right? They understand that the majority of candidates are not going to have the opportunity of interviewing with the professor of naval science or the
XO. Right.
And they realize that if the write-up doesn't sound like a 06 or an 05, they understand that already, right?
That's people right. And the write-ups also get graded. And each one has an average. My average was said predominantly low. Anybody that was a good candidate that interviewed really well, I would say scored this and my average is much lower. Pick this person now. If you're not going to pick him, if you've got questions about this candidate during the scholarship board, pick up your phone and call me. So things like that. And other professors of naval science do that also, regardless of Marine Corps or Navy, get very involved, sometimes very particular about the students that they interview or that they brief during the board themselves. It's some eye-watering, some serious potential out there that you want to see win. And so you just lay it all out there when you're briefing and you say, you guys need to vote high on this person.
Right. You mentioned 7 or 8 people that are this board. As I understand it, the way that it's done is that each of the 7 or 8 board members have a particular candidate that they have that they're presenting to the board, rather than not every board member is looking at all the candidates.
They're carved up beforehand. The centralized authority up there in Chicago at NSTIC will carve up the amount of records that are seen in each board. And inside each board, those records are then carved up and given to each member of the board. Even the president of the board briefs a segment of records. And you get them and you highlight pieces that you want to talk about. And you will brief a young man or a young woman's record that they probably poured their heart into. You will spend probably about 10 or 15 minutes going over the record, highlighting pieces. And then when you brief it, you'll brief it in probably 2 minutes. When they put together their record, they put together their package, it's got to be impactful. It has to be succinct. It needs to reach through the computer monitor, so to speak, and say, pick me.
Each board member then votes based on your presentation.
Right.
Yeah, that is really, I think, a great system. It's really a very personalized system. I know for Army, the way that it works is they don't even go and meet with each other. You just sit in your computer terminal at your college or university and go through each, and then they assign a points from 1 to 6, and then it's all averaged. And if you're out of bounds by a point or so, you'd have to relook the file, but then a score is given and that's it. It's a cutoff. Yeah. There's not really that personal touch, I think, that the Navy does.
We don't know who these people are either. They're assigned a briefing number, and sometimes you can't even tell whether they're male or female.
Wow, the amount of detail that the Navy goes into in their selection process shows the care that's put in there. Candidates and their parents who are listening to this, I think that should be their main takeaway, that care is put into every single applicant who comes in and goes in front of the board. And it's one time. They go in front of the board one time. They're looked at there. They get a score. And then eventually they're selected, as I understand it, if they have a high enough score.
A certain cutoff line will be set based on records, previous year's average number, and the president of the board will know what it is, but everybody else won't. And when they brief and they score out an individual, the person, say I'm giving the brief, I have no idea, unless I'm the president, what that line has been set at. And that the area around the line, we call the crunch, you're either going to make it over the line and be a scholarship winner, or if you're near the line, you may get revisited to see if we can push you over the line, see if we made numbers or not. And if not, all those records that are close get revisited at the end anyways, the end of the board process, the last board, to see if we have more room to maneuver for numbers to make for scholarships without reducing the bar for greatness too much. We'll revisit a few records to see what was really the hard point. And the best thing about that is that it's completely different people looking at it than the previous times.
That's the April timeframe. That's going on right now for this group.
That's right
around the April timeframe. That's really interesting to see that you still have a chance later on to be selected, even though you may not be selected on an earlier board, because the boards are every month around. So if you get seen by the November board and you don't hear anything till March or April, it's just you probably weren't at the cut line yet.
That's right.
And
this board isn't just, oh, well, it's 1 o'clock, it's after lunch, and we sit down, we have the board. I would get there about 4:30 in the morning to go through records. I could be prepped and ready to discuss my individuals for that day. And then we would kick off the board at 8 or 9, depending on how many people in the different time zones were there. And we break for maybe a half hour for lunch, and we would go for the rest of the day until probably about 1700, about 5 o'clock. And it's a 12-hour day just dealing with this, but it's 12 hours well spent.
How many candidates about for each person is briefing around during the whole board process? You got 10, 20?
It depends. If you're new to the process, you'll get a low number. And then if you've been with the process for a while, you'll get a high number. And sometimes if something happens to a board member, they'll just go ahead and divvy up the individuals to other board members. So depending on who you are, you could be there for 10 to 15 individuals, maybe as high as 20, depending on where we are in the board season, what's happened with the board dynamics throughout the week. Someone got sick or someone can only do a half a day.
That's interesting, just the care that's put in there. And then for the fact that you have a chance later on to be selected, even though maybe earlier you weren't. This has been great. I know that you and I could probably talk for another hour or 2 hours about the subject. We didn't even touch. We didn't talk about the Marine Corps too much. And there's all sorts of other things. Really appreciate you coming by today. And we're really excited about you being able to help and guide individuals who are interested in navigating this process and just being able to take advantage of all of your years of experience in the Navy, as well as Navy ROTC, to be able to be best prepared to join Navy ROTC.
No, I'm looking forward to it. It's one of those things where service doesn't stop. It just moves position.
Thanks for coming onto the podcast. And we'll do this again sometime soon. If there's ever a change in Navy ROTC that's worth speaking about.
Be awesome. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. If you like what we're doing, please leave a quick review. If you have any questions or want more information about ROTC or our consulting services, please visit our website at rotcconsulting.com. Take care, and we'll see you next time.